And did you hear on my mind every hour of the day without your sweet inspiration?
It's Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on the West Coast, which means it's time for the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. This is Tammy Jackson. Of course, I'm welcoming you to an hour of sweet conservative inspiration. You can interact with comments and questions on Twitter during the show. Go ahead and follow me at Tammy J, T-A-M-I-J. Now, we're hunting down our first guest, Kurt Schlichter, trying to find the appropriate contact, and he's out there somewhere in the digital universe waiting for us to call him. So we're going to take a quick break and round Kurt up, and then we will be right back on the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
The President and I have witnessed firsthand the compassion and commitment of Americans as friends, neighbors, and strangers continue to volunteer time and money to help one another following the recent hurricanes. Your help is still needed. Donate to an organization of your choice and volunteer to help your fellow Americans. Visit nvoad.org and ready.gov to learn more.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
I love Tammy.
I love you back, Kurt, because I'm a caring kind of gal.
The Tammy Jackson Show.
I'm just one conservative gal encouraging you to keep fighting the good fight.
Tammy is what conservative insurgency is about.
Tammy Jackson, the granddaughter of legal immigrants.
In Honduras, they had 60,000 murders per 100,000, or something like that. And I thought, whoa, that is a lot.
Like every other person on the block is dead.
Tammy Jackson, the emerging threat from the West Coast.
Tammy has made herself into a rising radio star.
When we have these mass amounts just suddenly pour into the United States, we have a worse problem than we already have had with assimilation.
The Tammy Jackson Show, Tuesday nights, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, only on the 405media.com.
Anything for you, Tammy.
The 405.
We're back. This is Tammy Jackson, and I found my guest. I am so excited. My guest is the wonderful Kurt Schlichter. Schlichter is the principal trial counsel of Schlichter & Schoenach, LLP. Hey, say that 10 times in a row, will ya? And a graduate of Loyola Law School. Kurt's a veteran with a master's in strategic studies from the U.S. Army War College, an infantry colonel in the California Army National Guard, and a veteran of Desert Storm and Kosovo, also a former stand-up comic, which you will discern a little bit of that as we continue on. He loves military history, red meat, the Second Amendment, and his favorite caliber is .45.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders has just put out a statement.
Sorry.
That's okay. And Kurt is married to the very lovely Irina, has two kids, lives in the South Bay, L.A. area. Kurt Schlichter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I know you're a busy guy. Everybody, if you don't know Kurt and haven't read all his stuff and listened to him, you should, but he's hard to miss. He's on Fox News all the time, but he's kind of SoCal's own Perry Mason, fighting for truth, justice, and the American way and beating down liberals at every turn. So he doesn't have a lot of time. I was thrilled that he could make it on. Kurt, your columns are always fun. They're pretty much pure gold. And in the last week or so, you had a couple that I loved. And I bet, oh, man, if I can get Kurt on, this will be perfect. I want to start with the older article, Let's All Savor the Democrats' Pervgate Pain. Pervgate, of course, that's perfect, Kurt, really perfect. You begin the article. I'll set this up for you. Some say that it is so very wrong to take so much pleasure at a scandal in which the heroes of the Democrat Party are all being exposed as handsy-tonguey creeps. But if it's wrong to laugh at all the hilarious comeuppance these hypocrites are suffering, I don't want to be right. In fact, I want to be super, mega, hyper wrong. And then you write, liberals have always been a bunch of lying posers pretending to be allies of women, and some of us always knew it was a scam to see the truth so gloriously revealed, and to watch their humiliating backpedaling equivocation is wonderful. Get me a cigarette and cuddle, wonderful. You were having fun writing this, weren't you, Kurt? Come on.
I had a good time writing it, and I always have a good time writing my stuff. I think it's, I enjoy getting out there and making people miserable, bad people, liberal people.
It's because you're a caring kind of guy.
I am. I give so much, and it's hard. It's hard, but I try and make a difference.
Well, you do, and I... I was thinking, gee, I think Kurt was almost gleeful as he wrote this because your snark factor was razor sharp. It was flawless. I can read a little bit more so people can get a sense of this. Of course, both the articles we're going to talk about, they're linked on the show page. People have to read them in their entirety to really have fun with it. And they need to share them with all their friends. You continue your article, Let's All Savor the Democrats' Pervgate Pain. Sure, we have an issue of our own. But is it unfair to point out that the judge jailbait was a Democrat back when he was cruising malls for teen action? Yeah, it's probably unfair. Too bad. Own your perversions, party of the wandering hands. Roy Moore is a problem, but he's just one problem. It's probably easier to list all the Democrats who we haven't recently found out are positively Weinsteinian. So, Kurt, you're single-handedly creating new monikers and nouns in every single paragraph. And then there is this barn burner of a paragraph. Senator Al Franken continued his unbroken dumbness streak by actually letting someone photograph him while he made a play for the only kind of woman who digs him, an unconscious one. That made it a bit hard to deny, though he did troop out seven women to assure us that he never harassed any of them. Of course, most of us could probably round up seven people we didn't molest. Not Bill Clinton, but most of us. Okay, Kurt Schlichter, Al's affectionate. He's a hugger, man. Well, it looks like we've lost Kurt Schlichter. We had him on, and then we lost him. Doggone it. So we will try to get him back in a little bit.
Hey, I think I've Skyped back.
Oh, we've got him back.
This is amazing.
Technology.
Yeah, it's terrible and it's horrid and it's driving me crazy. But I'm now back.
At least you're back.
Yeah, and that's the important thing.
Yes. Tell us a little bit more about Al Franken. What are your thoughts about his picture?
You know, I'm so glad for Al Franken. This skeevy pervert with a roving hands perfectly encapsulates what Democrats are. You know, I think there's this kind of justice with them whining and screaming about Roy Moore, and then this guy comes along, and suddenly this, you know, dramatic imperative to throw people out who deny the allegations of unsworn witnesses. Suddenly that changes completely, even though there's like a photograph of him grabbing Leanne Tweeden. It's not even hypocrisy, because hypocrisy, you know, a hypocrite tends to know that he's doing the wrong thing. I don't even think Democrats have that sense. That's why I'm, you know, that's why my new position is anybody giving me an argument that I need to do something because of morality has to be presumed to be some sort of moral grifter trying to con and scam me. I just don't buy it anymore.
Right. Well, now all the Dems have awakened from a Rip Van Winkle state and just realized that Bill Clinton is a womanizer and sexual abuser.
Yeah, you know, I'm sick of having my morality weaponized against me, and I'm not going to do it anymore. I just, you know, like the guy in Office Space who says, I don't like my job and I'm not going to go anymore. Well, I'm kind of going to do that. And I don't care if, some whiny liberal, like today on Twitter, a whiny liberal with a, slightly vulgar username started lecturing on morality. And I'm like, no, that's not going to work. You don't get to do it, and I don't have to care, and I'm not going to care. And the same thing for some of the more active Never Trump guys, the, oh, well, I never crew. You know, I'm sick of lectures about decorum, and I'm sick of lectures about, you know, you can't do this, oh, well, I never. You know, it's done. I'm done. I'm not going to allow these people to attempt to basically scam me into losing. It just isn't going to happen. And if they don't like it, too bad.
Yeah. I agree with you. At the end of your article, let's all savor the Democrats' Pervgate pain. You write. The GOP might be the party of a perv, but the Democrats are the party of a bunch of pervs. That's your Democrat Party. That's who we conservatives will face in 2018. Sadly, the only people stupid enough to lose to these creeps are the ones running the GOP.
Well, that's certainly true.
Yes.
You know, I'd like to see a little more ruthlessness from my side, but all I see are the likes of Ben Sasse, you know, with his nonstop, we're better than that, you know, set of cliches. I'm sick of having people running our party who've never been in a fist fight.
Yeah, they've got to have a little bit of spying, which is something you know about being a retired Army colonel. I just think that we need people in the GOP that are not just beltway swamp people. They've got to be responsive to the electorate that put them there.
Well, you know, like I know, and I got a lot of friends back inside the Beltway, and I go back there, and it's a completely different environment. They just don't get it. The first thing is, you know, the Beltway flatters itself. Once you move in there, you suddenly begin to think that you're smarter than everybody else. In many cases, not everybody, but a lot of people. You know, not Larry O'Connor, not Hugh Hewitt, but. You get in there and I'll start getting people lecturing me on how the world is, you know, and it's usually some 25-year-old college grad who, you know, left Oberlin with a, you know, a history degree, and then went and worked at some think tank with Eagle and Forum in its title for 3 years. And they're lecturing me about foreign policy when, you know, I lived overseas about 5 years of my life. And they're lecturing me about business when I've actually built a couple of them. And they're lecturing me on, you know, how it is, you know, for people outside of Washington. And I realize they don't have a car and can't even get past the Beltway. They're terrible and they need to be slapped. And I'm tired of it.
Yep, I am too.
Hey, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I think we can take a quick break, and then I'll come back with Kurt Schlichter, and we'll get rid of the echo, and then you'll really appreciate him more.
Uh-oh.
The TM Jackson Show is sponsored by Robart Companies, a true custom firearms and firearms finish shop in Phoenix, Arizona. They also have combat optic tools. You're going to need one for Christmas. It's small, it's light, it works with ACOGs, aimpoints, L-cans, and other combat optics. And there's even a bottle opener on one end of it after a hot day at the range. So if you want a firearm that is custom made by Robar, if you want your firearm redone and refurbished, or if you want an optic tool, check out RobarGuns.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405. Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
This is Mike from the Wrestling Mayhem Show, the show where we get fans and people in the wrestling industry together to talk about pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, WrestleMania, all kinds of fun. It's a podcast party. Check it out. Wrestling Mayhem Show right here on the 405 Media.
Listen to the Wrestling Mayhem Show now 7 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, right here on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
The president and I have witnessed firsthand the compassion and commitment of Americans as friends, neighbors, and strangers continue to volunteer time and money to help one another following the recent hurricanes. Your help is still needed. Donate to an organization of your choice and volunteer to help your fellow Americans. Visit nvoad.org and ready.gov to learn more.
This is Tammy Jackson, joined by my guest, Kurt Schlichter. If you're just joining the show, Kurt Schlichter was personally recruited to write conservative commentary by Andrew Breitbart. He's a successful L.A. trial lawyer, a veteran with a master's in strategic studies from the U.S. Army War College, and a former stand-up comic. But for almost half an hour, Kurt has carved out a little time to be on with me tonight. Kurt, you had a terrific article, another one, we talked about one before the break, at townhall.com. It's titled Dating Tips for Prominent Democrats. It is hilarious. Everybody needs to read it, and it's also linked on the show page. You begin the article. We've learned so much about what women face in the last few weeks, and you liberal men should take this as an opportunity to change, specifically out of your flapping bathrobes and into some Dockers. Groping, flashing, molesting shrubs, believe it or not, some women consider these things to be wrong, crazy. Sure, but for now, it's no more monkey business as usual. I love it, Kurt.
Well, I'm glad. I think it's about time. You know, I think it's important to use caustic humor and sarcasm against our opponents. For too long, we've treated them like good faith debating, you know, opponents, I guess. And they're not. They're just terrible. And I think we need to mock them. And I think we need to do it brutally. And that's what I try and do.
Yeah, and you did a little bit further in this article. You write, being a Democrat leader has always been a traditional path to making special new friends for guys who can't cut it on looks and personality. Face it, no one ever said, you know who's hot? Al Franken. I bet he can bench his body weight.
I know. I mean, you know, Washington seems to attract a lot of weirdos, losers, and mutations who suddenly get powerful and like a lot of attention. I mean, John Conyers, not a player yet, apparently, you know, it just twists people. Like we were talking about before, they get this inaccurate view of reality, like the notion that they're smart and intelligent and have something to say to the rest of us. You know, if anything, Washington, if Washington needed anything, it would be some humility.
Yes.
Sometimes somebody, I'd love to see somebody in Washington go, you know, maybe we don't have the answers, and actually mean that rather than just say it around election time to fool the rubes.
Well, they're surrounded by sycophants. Most of them, a lot of them, have not had jobs in the real world, thinking, you know, the Obamas, the Clintons, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure a lot of them have never been in the sandbox, have never been in the military. They're making ROE, they're doing all this stuff, and they don't know what they're talking about. And they just think that they're the center of the universe. And, you know, so humility is probably the last thing they would consider even a character quality they wanted.
Exactly. Not everybody in Washington is terrible, just like not everybody outside of Washington is, you know, awesome, salt of the earth, you know, wisdom generating, hardworking guy, you know. But there is a complete failure of humility in Washington. And I think that's why Trump is so effective against them, because he just doesn't respect them.
Right.
That's what really gets them. He just thinks they're losers, and he actually tells them, and he doesn't care. And that's why they get all mad. I mean, you know, the Pocahontas thing yesterday, which I thought is the funniest damn thing I've ever seen. And I think the Navajo code talkers were probably pretty cool about it. They probably thought it was pretty funny, too.
Yes.
I mean, the guy's been in Okinawa. It's not, you know, I think he can take Pocahontas.
I think so, too.
But, you know, normal people find that funny because it's taking down this, you know, jerk a peg. But in Washington, it's not. It includes the concern. Well, that's just awful. Yo, you're so racist. Well, first of all, it's not racist. That's just stupid. But what they really don't like is the fact that one of their own, a Harvard professor who's now a senator, is being, you know, pretty effectively mocked.
Right.
And they don't like it. Who are you to mock her?
I know. A woman. A woman of all things.
She's important, smart. She went to Harvard, you know. Did I mention she went to Harvard? And it's, you know, and you get the Republicans doing this idiocy, too.
Yeah.
You know, the Ben Sasse is, oh, well, this is just the worst thing that's ever been. No, you know what the worst thing that's ever been? Let me give you a few ideas. How about Doug Jones wanting to abort kids until they're about 5 years old? I think that's worse than a joke.
Yep.
I think that's a lot worse than a joke. And if you want to lecture me about dignity in public office, maybe it's stop banging everybody in sight.
Right. Oh, okay. I
don't need lectures from the people, you know, especially the never Trumpers are, we must elect Hillary because Trump is, oh, well, I never. He's just so, you know, one of those. You know, this is the enabler of someone who's using his intern as a humidor in the Oval Office. I don't need lectures about decorum from these idiots and why anyone takes them seriously instead of falls on the ground in hysterical laughter pointing. And yeah. Just going, you're just kidding me, right?
I know. And think about it. Hillary Clinton as president, she was the woman that won the Margaret Sanger Award from Planned Parenthood. And she said she was honored to get that award from that eugenicist that started that group. Please. You know, I have...
I,
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would love some. And I know I focus on the never Trumpers, but people who betray you always make you madder than the enemy.
Right.
You know, I figure the enemy's the enemy. They're just doing their job. Somebody who's supposed to be on my side, you know, you get a Bill Kristol and he starts talking about how we need a deep state coup. I guess he's going insane because he can't sell out the cabins on the Lido deck anymore.
Well, a lot of people ask me, how could you vote for Trump? I said, well, it's a binary choice. And
yeah.
And they said, well, we might not be able to trust him. I said, maybe, but we really...
Oh, we'll trust a politician.
Yeah, but we can trust, Hillary. And I tell him, but you know that you can 100% trust Hillary. We can trust that she's pro-abortion. We can trust that she's pro-open borders. We can trust that she's not really big on the military. She didn't give a rip about Benghazi. So think about all the things we can trust with her. So I want to give the Donald a chance. And, I mean, think of Gorsuch. Think of all the other judges that he's getting in place. Also, Kurt, I'm sure you noticed this, but I heard some Dems complaining on air about Trump secretly seating a lot of conservative judges throughout the nation. And I thought, wait a minute.
Seems pretty obvious to me.
Yeah, it seemed very obvious, and we just came off 8 years with Obama packing the courts. Who do they think these people are that are stopping everything Trump's trying to do, all these judges?
Well, you know what gets me is Trump is the most conservative president since Ronald Reagan. I mean, he, without a doubt, and he's the most and he's the most ruthless because he doesn't play games. You know, I keep hearing these guys like bemoaning the fact that Republicans no longer show decorum. And then I watched the massacre George W. and Mitt Romney, both of whom who have faults, but, you know, being vulgar wasn't one of them.
Right.
Right now, being backstabbing little wimps is one of them. you know, I'm so disgusted. You know, there's a lot I like about George Bush, but I got to tell you, I was disgusted, and I found it a huge lack of character when he decided after 8 years of Obama, now when Trump's in, he's got to start mouthing off about the problems with the presidency and essentially chastising the people who elected him. You know, and so much of it, and I know why it was, is personal resentment, because we rejected his ne'er-do-well brother Jeb. There is so much of Never Trump is driven by the fact that they have been personally rejected. They wanted to maintain their sinecures and their positions of power and authority without any kind of accountability, and then we held them accountable, and Trump's the result, and they're mad. Bill Kristol's not mad because Donald Trump is doing all these things. He's mad because Bill Kristol's a big fat nobody now. And the only thing he can get invited to is ABC or MSNBC. No one else wants to hear from his sorry rear.
Yeah, that's
and no one wants to take his stupid cruise rides. He's a nobody now, and he hates it, and he's mad. And he doesn't care if the conservative movement loses. The one he's been pushing for 30 years, and it never seemed to get – never seemed to conserve anything.
Yes.
And when we finally fired him, because that's what we essentially did, we fired the establishment, they got mad because now they don't have the power and the authority. The gall of these people to demand respect and prestige without any kind of accountability, without any kind of results, it's pretty remarkable, but it's very Washington.
Yes. It is. Hey, we're coming to the end of our time, and you're just getting going, and I think, oh my gosh, I just teed him off, and he's about ready to bat for the cycle, and then I have to cut him off. Kurt, I love having you on, and I want everybody to look at your articles and read your stuff. They ought to be checking Town Hall for your stuff all the time. And you've been
Monday
gracious.
And Thursday.
I know. There you go. And I repost with attribution, of course, with permission over at barbedwire.com because they're that good.
Well, yeah. Some people, including prominent conservatives, don't. And I had a little problem with that yesterday. You know, if you're going to steal my article, you can at least put my damn name on it.
See, I've had that happen to little old me in some of my articles. And I thought, oh, I would never in a million years do that. Plus.
Oh, I know you. Not you. You're
awesome. Not me. No, I'm okay, and I give credit where credit is due. Hey, thank Irina for me for sharing you and your acerbic wit for half an hour.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you bet.
Hi, everybody.
I'll have you on again.
Never Trumpers.
Okay. Yeah. Bye-bye, Kurt.
Care. Bye, thanks.
You're listening to The Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'll be back on the other side of the break with President and CEO of the Buckeye Institute, Robert Ault. The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by Rent-A-Computer. An agent from rentacomputer.com can save your company time and money on your next short-term need for a computer, audiovisual, or office equipment rental. Rentacomputer.com delivers the rental hardware your event needs to your office, trade show booth, or event venue location anywhere in the United States or Canada. Their offerings include Apple iPads, iPhones, Microsoft Surface tablets, and even copiers. So, if you're planning your next corporate event, remember, rentacomputer.com provides a superior turnkey event rental service with only one point of contact for clients, both large and small. Visit rentacomputer.com or call them at 800-736-8772. That's rentacomputer.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the talk alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
This is Mike from the Wrestling Mayhem Show, the show where we get fans and people in the wrestling industry together to talk about pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, WrestleMania, all kinds of fun. It's a podcast party. Check it out. Wrestling Mayhem Show right here on the 405 Media.
Listen to the Wrestling Mayhem Show now 7 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, right here on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
Children are at greater risk than adults from contaminants carried by floodwater. Since they dehydrate faster, they need to drink plenty of fluids. If the safety of your water is in question, either use bottled water or bring tap water to a rolling boil for at least 1 minute and let it cool before use. You should also keep children away from mud and make sure they don't play with anything that may have become polluted by floodwater or sludge. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
When I was young, I should have known better.
This is Tammy Jackson. I'm a little over halfway through the show tonight on the 405 Media. Now I'm joined by my guest, Robert Ault. Robert Ault is the president and chief executive officer of the Buckeye Institute, where he serves on the board of trustees. His leadership has been the catalyst for the Buckeye Institute's exponential growth since he took over, or since he took the organization's helm in 2012. He has founded the Buckeye Institute's esteemed Economic Research Center and Legal Center. He's also nationally recognized as a scholar with expertise in legal policy, including criminal justice, national security, and constitutional law. And prior to heading the Buckeye Institute, this is pretty interesting, he was the director of the Center for Legal and Judicial Studies, serving under former USAG Edwin Meese at the Heritage Foundation. He earned his JD from the University of Chicago Law School. Following law school, he clerked for Judge Alice Batchelder on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. He graduated with his B.A. in political science and philosophy from Azusa Pacific University, which Azusa Pacific was one of the colleges I was looking at once upon a time. Robert Ault, thanks for taking time to be on the show tonight.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, you've authored a terrific column. I've got it embedded in the show post. It's titled Public Sector Unions Give Workers No Voice, No Choice. The column begins, "Every morning, hardworking men and women across this country pour their morning coffee and diligently go to work on our behalf, working in our neighborhoods as public school teachers, home care workers, engineers, and in agencies protecting the environment. Unfortunately, while these civic-minded professionals go to work for us, the labor unions that they must join in order to teach our children or serve our communities do not always work for them. Once a public sector union is certified, it remains the workers' representative potentially forever. In Ohio, for example, the Columbus Education Association has represented Columbus public school teachers since 1968, back when the Beatles were still together and before many of today's teachers were even born." Robert Ault, public sector unions are defined as trade unions which primarily represent the interests of employees within public sector or governmental organizations. But is that really true?
Is it true that they're not representing the interests of of the workers? I think the best thing to do is to ask the workers in those unions. And I think that there's a fair amount of frustration that they just don't feel like they can hold their unions truly accountable. And when we've done quite a bit of polling in this area of union workers, and an interesting thing, 85% of them feel that holding regular periodic elections where they would be able to vote for their union representation would make those unions more accountable. The interesting thing is, at least tacitly, it seems like the union leadership agrees. If you go to our website, workervotingrights.org, you can see we've got quotes from some leading union management, including, I believe it's the head or former head of AFSCME, one of the larger public sector unions in the country. And he talked about before reforms were put in place in a state which permitted elections, he had to concede we were taking our members for granted. We weren't even communicating with them, which I suppose at a certain level makes sense. If you have one of these one-and-done elections, where the union is voted in perhaps 40, 50 years ago, and they never have to stand for re-election to be the representative of the bargaining unit. At that point, it doesn't matter if the union provides good service, bad service, or no service at all, they're still going to be that bargaining representative. And so, you know, you take a look at this, the idea that there should never be an election, I think it strikes most union workers as unfair, and also as something which deprives them of their voice and their opportunity to keep their unions accountable.
You've got an interesting title for them. You call them heirloom unions, apparently because they just stay there forever. You write in the article, Robert Ault, "Many public employees did not vote for their union, if only because they could not vote for their union. They were never given the chance or the choice. Fair and open elections promote accountability. To borrow a popular advertising jingle, everyone knows this. Less known, however, is that these inherited public unions are currently denying their own employees the ability to vote." Now, you started into this with your last answer, but Robert Ault, I had no idea that public union members had no vote. That seems incredible to me.
As we dug into it, it was far worse than I could have anticipated. Across the country, 94% of union workers have never had the opportunity to vote for the union representation. It's absolutely shocking to me. Equally shocking, I think, is the number of those workers who would like to have a vote. Nationwide in polling, it's about 82 to 85% of union workers favor having regular periodic elections for their union representation. Here in Ohio, it's actually even higher. We oversampled union households because we really wanted to get a sense of how union workers felt about this issue. 90% of union households in Ohio favor having regular periodic elections. That's actually higher than the public as a whole, and I suppose it makes sense. They understand this is really about empowering the worker. It's about giving them a voice and a choice with regard to their own union representation.
Yes, yes. You continue in your article, "Public Sector Unions Give Workers No Voice, No Choice." When a public sector union fails to address employee complaints or misspends union dues, there is no ballot for the teachers or public servants to cast to change their union. Instead, public employees remain stuck with the hand-me-down union that workers who wore bell-bottoms chose for them. There has to be a better way, and there is. Now, you've touched on this already, but what is that better way?
Well, what we recommend is a system called worker voting rights. Federal law permits the states to enact worker voting rights for public sector workers. And again, these are public employees who are members of unions. These could be, you know, sort of your public school teachers. These could be working for state individuals working for state agencies. The states can require regular elections, which would give those workers the opportunity to choose whether or not they would like to keep the union that's representing them. That also opens up the opportunity for other unions to compete to represent in that workplace, something that currently is all but non-existent. It is possible under current law for workers to go ahead and decertify a union, but the process is very difficult. It's stacked against the workers. You have to collect a large number of signatures in a very short amount of time just to be able to have an election. The presumption is against having any kind of an election. Just to put it into perspective, in many workplaces in Ohio, the number of signatures you would have to gather just to be able to hold an election would be more signatures than that worker would need to gather if he or she wanted to run for governor of the state of Ohio. And I think they've got something like 2 weeks in order to gather those signatures. So It really stacks the deck against workers who would seek to actually inject some competition. Perhaps, you know, they'd like to see a different union represent them. Worker voting rights would open it up to where, with the regular periodic elections, other unions could compete for their business. And in general, as we know, competition is good. It makes everyone better. It reduces price. It improves quality. We all saw what happened in the bad old days of the cable companies, just as an example. You'd have one cable provider who was offering service to your neighborhood. You'd get an installation time frame of sometime between, you know, 12 noon today and 4 p.m., you know, a week from Thursday, and the price kept on going up. But with competition, you get a shorter time window for installation. Prices have gone down. Quality has gone up. Competition makes everyone better. And there's no reason to believe that wouldn't happen with the unions as well.
Good to know. If you're just joining the show, this is Tammy Jackson. My guest is Robert Ault, president and CEO of the Buckeye Institute, which is a free market public policy organization. Ault earned his JD from the University of Chicago Law School. He has an impressive and interesting bio, so check out the show page for the details. Click on the link to the Buckeye Institute where you can see their work over at the site. Also, click on the link to workervotingrights.org. I want everybody to check that out. This is something that you may not be a teacher or a postal worker or an EPA employee, but you probably have someone in the family or a friend that is. This affects a whole lot of people, and it's pretty darn interesting as we're talking about the public sector unions and the necessity of worker voting rights. Robert Ault, as you write in your article, public sector unions give workers no choice, no voice, no choice. With worker voting rights, public employees can have a voice and a choice about their union through regular union elections that make those unions more responsible, more responsive, and accountable to their members' interests. Worker voting rights would give union workers an opportunity to be heard, to voice their concerns to their union leaders, to better understand how their union dues are spent, to choose for themselves whether to keep the union they have, vote their union out, or vote in a better union. Worker voting rights would incentivize union leaders to cultivate broader support among the workforce they represent and to be accountable to their rank and file members. Not surprisingly, 82% of unionized Americans favor holding periodic votes on their union representation. Now, Robert Ault, I realize there was a time when unions were necessary and did good things. And quite personally, I'm not a huge fan of unions. I kind of consider them at times a necessary evil. They seem to be like a tax, something that is never sunsetted. And you do write, even if these public employees have been deserved or dissatisfied with their representation, they have to continue paying union dues or fair share fees, or their employment can be legally terminated. Would you explain what fair share fees are, Robert Ault?
Sure, sure. If you don't live in a right to work state, then union membership or paying the cost of collective bargaining can be a condition of employment. Which is to say, if you fail to pay your union dues or what are called fair share fees, and I'll explain that in a moment, your employer would be required to fire you. You aren't required to become a member of the union under these circumstances. You can pay, again, what are called fair share fees. These are agency fees. This is what the union estimates to be the cost just of providing the collective bargaining services, not including some of the other membership services above and beyond collective bargaining. But generally speaking, this ends up being, the vast majority of the cost of the union dues. So you can save some by not being a member of the union, but you don't save a great deal. And there's been a number of concerns about this process in recent years. There was a teacher in California, Rebecca Friedrichs, who took a case all the way up to the Supreme Court. She was concerned because she felt she was an agency fee payer, but she felt that the union was engaging in speech related to collective bargaining, which was contrary to, speech that she desired to engage in. She essentially was exercising her right not to speak in that way. She felt that the unions, for instance, spent too much time defending teachers who were acting abusively towards students or bargaining for benefits which omitted merit as a consideration in teacher pay and retention, which is not how she would have sought to have bargained. So she argued that this violated her First Amendment rights. The case went all the way up to the Supreme Court. Argument was heard, and soon thereafter, Justice Scalia passed away. So the court ended up deadlocking on the case. The Supreme Court has this term taken a second case, the Janus case, which raises a very similar issue. And so the Supreme Court is likely to hear that case sometime early next year, raising the issue of whether or not public sector workers can be compelled to pay for collective bargaining speech, with which they may disagree.
Wow. Okay. I love following SCOTUS cases, so I am going to be keeping track of that. Maybe I could have you back on as that gets closer. I'm wondering now, with Judge Gorsuch on the court, replacing Scalia if there might be a chance that this will be decided in a more favorable way for the plaintiffs?
Well, certainly at this point, the odds are that you're going to have five votes one way or the other. One hazards to count Supreme Court votes before they come in, but I think a lot of court watchers think that Justice Gorsuch would be probably fairly open to the free speech arguments that the plaintiffs are making in this case.
Yeah, I would assume so as well. Of course, I'm not a legal scholar like you, but I follow all this stuff closely. Also, something that came to my mind where you talked about the unions themselves assess what the fair share fees should be that cover their bargaining and so forth. To me, that seems like that's got to be an arbitrary amount. I can't imagine that there's a precise formula for that. So that would be disconcerting to me as a member.
Well, I'm not familiar with the full process in terms of what they go through. I believe there can be an accounting. There have been lawsuits over this sort of thing in the past, and indeed, I know a teacher who disputed how the fees were calculated and ultimately won both on her behalf and on behalf of other teachers to find more fees were taken than were necessary for the collective bargaining. But this is a perennial dispute. Frequently, for instance, I know the unions will go ahead and engage in what they refer to as educational activities. They're not supposed to use union dues for political contributions or political activities. The actual political contributions are run through a political action committee. And so if you're a member, often you have the opportunity under a Supreme Court case not to give to the PAC, to the political action committee of the union, which is to say not to give direct political contributions to candidates. Frequently, again, you'll end up seeing these glossy magazines that will be mailed or flyers that will be mailed to union members from the unions that show politicians shaking their hands or giving speeches and the like, which a lot of members, rightly are concerned about, that they look very political in nature, and oftentimes they're paid because they're not actually calling for the direct election of any particular individual. And so because of that, they're paid for with general union funds instead of the PAC funds. And so it's these sorts of things, it's these marginal questions about how funds are used that oftentimes disturb members. And that really goes to that whole accountability question. Even the use of union funds in the PACs, across the country, the vast majority of union spending is for Democratic candidates. Oddly enough, here in Ohio, the unions end up contributing at the state level very heavily to Republicans. But at the end of the day, as a union worker, you have precious little say in terms of how those funds, how politically engaged the union is and how those funds are spent. And my sense is that many of the union workers probably would prefer to have the unions focus a bit more on collective bargaining and a bit less on politics.
Yeah, some good points. I was thinking as I read your article, last week I interviewed Michael Franzese. He was a former capo in the Colombo crime family. And it was very interesting because I thought, gee, how is this, the union, all that different from a mafia member forcing extortion for so-called protection or something? Because it seems like there's very little choice there. You end the article, "Public sector unions give workers no voice, no choice. Unions have played a significant role in America's workforce for well over a century, but the heritage, legacy, and interests of the unions themselves should never trump the interests of the hardworking men and women these unions represent, our civil servants and public sector employees deserve to have their voices heard, and their choices matter. They deserve worker voting rights. So, again, the best solution is worker voting rights. The full article I have embedded on the show page, so people can see it there. There is also a link to the Buckeye Institute and workervotingrights.org. So, Robert Ault, it has been great to make your acquaintance. I thank you for taking time to be on the show. I'd love to have you on again if you're willing.
Absolutely. Happy to come back and chat about this or perhaps chat about the Janus case once we get a little closer to oral arguments there.
Yes, I would love that, and I will be following it. There's several cases I'm keeping an eye on. I've interviewed people from ADF and other organizations, and so I'm usually keeping my finger on that pulse, the SCOTUS pulse. Thanks again for being on, and I will have you back, Robert Ault.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'll be back next week with more great guests. But until then, this is Tammy Jackson reminding you to wake up. Don't be silent. Let your voice be heard, because we have a country to save.
I cut my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth. And I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preach what I should and I should not do. And the choir sang. I tried to be a good boy, but I ain't a boy no more. That a man just can't ignore. And this world's gonna see what I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence. You can't steal my voice. You can't keep me quiet. I will break the noise. Try to beat me down. Shut my mouth, but there's a time to speak, and the time is now. The squeaky wheel is always angry. Well, I've been sitting still, park here on the side. Shut up!